And the Rocket Man with us this hour as we take your phone calls, talking about the moon, rocketry, space. David Adair with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, David Adair with us. We'll get to your calls, too. David, I want to thank you for spending this extra hour with us. I just love it when you go the distance here with us, my friend. You with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, there
my
you are.
My pleasure.
Okay.
My pleasure.
You never know when they get your phones. But to the phones we go. Let's go to Alvin in Fresno, California, where they had that tragedy yesterday, of course. Alvin, go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Oh, yes, great show. Thank you, George. Yeah, tragedy today.
Oh, God.
You know, thoughts and prayers go out this instance. But back on subject to your guest, I wanted to know if you could confirm, spanning from Project Paperclip, I've always heard, you know, the Nazi Germany, the scientists that came over, not only did they bring their intellect and projects and advanced, you know, viewing, but also they brought alchemy. And I always heard rumor that alchemy played a huge part in the rocket system and also in the, just the space program in general. I heard it was like actually the foundation on many projects becoming complete. Like all that was missing was alchemy. So I wanted to know, like, if you can confirm, do you have any knowledge of alchemy being a part of these government projects? If not then, maybe now.
All right, great questions, Alvin. David, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I watched the guys blend the fuels for the bumper rockets. That's the V2s that we came over, modified, and start the space program with. And their knowledge of fuels and how they mix, especially at the cryogenic levels, they would do stuff with kerosene that was just unbelievable. They almost got as much power out of kerosene as if they were using liquid hydrogen. And that became a stabilizer in the first stage of the Saturn V moon rocket. The F1s, they were using kerosene with liquid oxygen. And look at the power that this thing generated. You're looking at, you know, 7.6 million pounds of thrust out of five engines. You know, how did they do that? Even, I think about it today, it's just back then, people just didn't understand the mixing of chemicals at temperatures 375, 325 degrees below zero. And the explosive power they could get out of it was just amazing. And that's a good word for it. It looked like alchemy.
David, the Project Paperclip, where we really picked up the cream of the crop, as did the Russians as well, I think without Wernher von Braun and some of the other people he brought with him, we probably would have been way behind in the space program. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It would have been the other way around. The Soviets would have been on the moon, and we just stand here.
That's right.
Trying to shoot up robots.
And as it was, they got Sputnik up before us.
Yeah, that's
say that 10 times.
Sputnik, yeah. Sputnik went, he was the first to go up, and boy, just something no bigger than a basketball just doing beeps. It sent a terror through the United States like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's like 9/11 all over here.
Yep. We've got Jeff in Bullhead City, Arizona now. Welcome to the program, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hey, what a thrill it is to talk to you, David. I got a quick question for you. A few weeks ago, George had a guest on who was talking about the collapsed binary star of our sun returning to planet Earth on May 20th of this year. I wonder if you heard anything about that, and I got one more question after that.
Not a whole lot. I've heard some talk about it. The odds and distances of these things to occur would really be highly unlikely. Not impossible, but highly unlikely. I just don't see. You better hope a binary star system doesn't come.
Yeah, exactly. I hope you're right, David.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Let's go back to you, Jeff, for your other question. Go ahead.
Well, I found this cool rock is like the shape of a cannonball or the size of a cannonball. Really heavy, honeycomb shaped on the outside, silver looking on the, you know, on the inside, outside layer, blackened also. Any idea what that might be?
I have no idea, but that sure sounds interesting.
Where did you get it?
I found it out here in Moorhead City. There's all kinds of cool rocks. You wouldn't believe the petrified rocks that are rounded from the rivers that used to run through here. There's just a fortune to be found out here in the desert. If you just come out here and look around, it's beautiful. Yeah. Down in Moorhead City, right across from Laughlin, Nevada.
Does it look like it might be man-made?
No.
Not at all. Okay.
No, not a chance. It looks like it came through the atmosphere, you know, burnt like that.
And you said it's real heavy.
Real heavy.
Iron.
And honeycomb shape.
Yeah, you might have a ferrous meteorite.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Is that worth anything, David?
Yeah, museums would pay a few dollars for that thing.
Well, yeah, pretty good. Jeff, you might want to walk it into a museum and see what...
I'd recommend to do so.
See what could happen. Back to that UFO conference that we were at, David. A lot of new speakers there in the field of ufology. Do you think governments will ever disclose what the heck is going on?
This may be disappointing, but I would say no way.
I'm in
no
your way. Camp. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to come that way.
They wrote the book on this stuff. I mean, they're the original authors. The only way you're going to force their hand, it will be somebody other than us or them. It'll be a third party that they can't control. That's whoever they sign contracts with. And they're not going to tell you anything until they're ready to do so. And there is nothing, I mean, nothing you can do to make these guys divulge what they know. And it's in control of something else that's not even, we're not even familiar with. But I know this crowd. I've worked with them for 11 years, and you're not going to force their hands on anything. I tried to tell Stephen Greer that when I was in the first Disclosure Project, and I told him, I said, you're never going to bend these people. You'll probably get yourself hurt or somebody will get killed.
That's right.
And Sherry Adamack was an alpha female, and I told her, you run that attitude like you are at me to them tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. when you have a meeting with them at the CIA. They will kill you. She got galloping cancer and died within 3 weeks.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
Well, I know these people. You know why they did pick her? She's a female, and Greer has four daughters, so he could watch one daughter go at a time. See, you're not going to force people to operate like that. You get it. What you need to do is figure out some kind of reasonable deal that they could take and try to make it easy on yourself. But you don't want to stir. You don't want to stick your hand in that fire. That's
no, you don't. Let's go to Jeff in Santa Rosa, California now. Hi, Jeffrey. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Norris. Thanks for the warning. appreciate that. You and Mr. Adair. This is for Mr. Adair. I live in Santa Rosa, California, and I discovered at the end of 2014 a Martian base colony here, and it's got a lot of technology in these relief pictures. I spoke a lot about it a couple of weeks ago with George Knapp, but he didn't get back to me for some reason. Anyway, you seem like you're not really hep on the government using your stuff as a first strike missile propulsion system. And this Martian base colony area has Martian propulsion system technology as mathematical statements in their Martian water animal rays relief pictures that are in the ground all through this area. If you go to Google Earth and you go to Mount St. Helena and down to Calistoga, which is just below the mountain, and then time jump back to 2007, specifically to the 12/12/2007 and 12/25/2007 black and white photos. You might have to actually, once you get to the Calistoga area, you might have to go to ground level to get the Google Earth to switch over to the those black and white photos. But that whole black and white area is just packed full from end to end with Martian water animal pictures. The easiest one to see is this, what I call this Martian water rat animal. It has a split tail for swimming and big flat ears. It looks just like a rat. And if you're down closer to ground level and you pull back to 20 to 30,000 feet, you can see a lot of detail in it, sharp fangs, teeth, eyes, the whole thing. And it doesn't have feet. It's got water sacs for gathering water. And it has, what I've learned is these Martian water animals have tubes that shoot out of these water sac areas with little cups for propulsioning themselves through the water.
Yeah.
But anyway, in that area, there's a gravel company called the Bodine Gravel Company. And right around that area, there are three large heads that are specifically what I've determined to be Mars propulsion systems. They show this, they actually have a drawing of a ship with a, it looks like a center pulse ship engine that is over there, and another one that has other mathematical stuff built in it as pictures, and another one that is actually the face on Mars, which is complete here on Earth, but I've linked it up to the one on the face on Mars also. It's just, it's the same picture. It's a little bit different. This area is completely terraformed from about Middleton all the way down to Vallejo, and then the mountain ranges, everything, it's all terraformed, and I think they actually were partially doing weather modification in the area at that time, too. In this particular area, it's about 3.4 million years old, which is when the last volcanic eruption happened. It wasn't from Mount St. Helena, but it was it was some volcanic area that was about 7 miles northeast, but they haven't found the exact spot. But I estimate that's when this area was actually made, or started anyway. And then there's another one down in Southern California that's older. I don't know when that is, but it's older than the 3.4. And then there's another one out in the middle of the Pacific somewhere that's even older than that. And in that one out there, you can actually see the tubes that they were wandering around in. Because some of them, I guess when the water rushed into that area out in the Pacific, it blew the tubes and busted the joints out, and they're just kind of scattered down at the bottom of the ocean down there. But you can see that in their base colony signature that says this is a base area. This is the Martian water animal that we use to distinguish this specific.
I'd love to see that thing.
I actually have a link. I've been posting these pictures. I sent it to OSI, Office of Strategic Investigation, Edwards Air Force Base.
Any response there, Jeff?
No, they didn't tell me nothing. I called down there and I asked them, hey, did you guys get that package I sent you guys? And they said, oh, yeah, we got it. And then not even one question, not a call, nothing, you know.
Could you send us a few pictures to me, george@coasttocoastam.com?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll, if when I'm done with this little phone call, if you want to give me back to your guy, whatever the gentleman's name was, I will give you the link, because this is a public link, and I don't mind if you post it or anything, but it's got these pictures in it, and I have two folders. One is 2016, and the other is 2017, and the 2016 folder is all of the Southern California stuff. I just kind of sketched it in. It's not really well done. And then the 2017 folder has the stuff from OSI. And I put that in a zip file, so you'll have to, the password's in, it's encrypted, it's a 7-zip, so it's 7-zip to open it up. But it's there, and I don't mind if you give it out to people, because I kept it pretty much as public as I could, but I had problems with hackers and people coming out of my computer and stuff, so I had to do it this way,
I'd love to see that creature. So, Tommy, take this call. He's going to give us a link. David, do you investigate, crypto sightings at all? Do you get in that at all, or are you primarily just the rocketry end?
I do all kinds of sciences. That area that he's describing in the Pacific Ocean is about 800 miles southeast of Starbuck. That's an island that's used out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It has nothing to do with the coffee company. Starbuck is an island that we've used forever in stuff we use in the United States Navy. We use it for refueling and navigation. But where he's describing that, man, that is remote. You could be out there in the water, and there's nothing around you.
Nobody will ever find you.
No, it's thousands of miles. I used to fly when I'm flying. They had me do tests, and I was working with the Tomcats, and I took a Tomcat through there. And it's just thousands of miles in all directions.
Talking about strange things, David, what about this lunar corn that you've talked about? What is that?
It all happened by mistake, and that's how you can learn some of the best things in science, when it's just something happens you never was even looking for it. I was over at Downey, California at Rockwell International. Now that's where they build the orbiters. And Al Ogram had me there. Al was head of public relations for Rockwell International at the time. We were good friends. And he told me to come over there, and when I did, he gave me some incredible stuff. They were moving the big film vault. And when they pulled the vault out away from the wall, I heard something hit the ground, the floor, and it's rolling. I said, Al, there's something rolling toward me. It's coming out from behind the vault and the wall, and it rolled right up to my foot, and there was a big 14-inch metal can that is a film can. And I picked it up, and I said, it's a 16-millimeter film. It's in this can. It had so much dirt and dust on it, it was just like a giant dust bunny. So I wiped it off with a rag and threw the thing in my briefcase, and I forgot about it. And I went home, and I just took the canister with me, a film. So I looked at it, and I thought, hey, I'll just put it on the 16-millimeter, and let's see what it is. So I plug it in, and I turn it on, and Johnson Winters, of all people, it's like a school film. You know, they have everybody come to an auditorium, watch it. So it's funny and lighthearted. And then Von Braun came on, and never seen any of this film footage. But then it really gets interesting. This other guy comes on. His name is Chris Kraft.
Oh, yeah, from NASA.
Yeah, not the boat builder. But he comes on, and he says something, and I dropped everything I had in my hand when I heard this. He said, welcome to the Biolunar Laboratories. And I went, oh, my God, that's an urban legend. There's never been any films in existence of the Biolunar Laboratories, and for good reason, and you're going to see why. He said, and he starts telling us, he said, well, he didn't say who, but he said, we came up with this idea that we will take kernels of corn and put them in this big hyperbolic control chamber, and we will stick our arms through these big rubber gloves, and you see all this. It's showing you the camera. And they are sprinkling moon dust on this corn. And I thought, oh, my God, I've heard of this, but I never saw it.
Like fertilizer?
Like fertilizer. And then they bring the cameras back in about, Chris said, well, now let's see how our corn's doing. He's talking to you like your children, right? In the school.
Well, and boys said, and girls.
Look at this. And, my God, they turn the cameras and go in the room, and he said, they've grown this big in 10 days. They were like 12 feet tall, the stalks.
Wow.
The root, he said, look at this root system. It's like some from another world. It did, I swear to God, look like an alien face hanger.
Because of the lunar dust, whatever you want to call it, huh?
Yeah, and the roots went up the glass all the way to 12, 14 feet. And it's just like spreading everywhere in the chamber. And then the ears of corn are hanging on it, about 4 foot long corn.
That fast?
That fast. But here's where this is where the fur flies. He said, well, we tested corn, has higher protein, and there's something in it, we can't detect it, but we have introduced every kind of corn-eating bug on the planet, and the bugs will not touch the plants.
What do you think was in there?
I don't know, something from the moon dust.
That's an interesting take. Hold on, David. We're at the break. We're coming back for final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Our final segment here with David Adair as we talk about things going on in space, and we'll get to your calls too. David, your fascination with the cosmos since you were a little boy has really paid off, I think, in what you've been doing. Do you still dabble in rocketry at all?
Just once in a great while, if I get a call from a client, actually the military calls me more often than anybody. But to answer your question, no, I haven't done, I've got three of them sitting on a workbench out there, and these are entirely different type of rockets, and I'm trying to figure out how to improve their performance. But I really work mostly on Fortune, about the top 300 and Fortune 500 are clients, and where I really make my living is I'm a technology transfer consultant. That's where we take stuff that's been designed and built to answer problems or needs we have in space, and I look at it and I redesign it and put it into a commercial venue. And
good for you.
That sounds foggy, but I'll give you an example of how it works. you have, in the pilot program, you have three adults in a walk-in closet, basically, in the command module. It's about as big as it is. And it's 3 days out, 2 days on the moon, 3 days back, so you got about 8 days. And they're eating food and drinking. Something's got to give, y'all. And everything floats up there, so you got a problem. So they need to go to the bathroom. So they had a problem, and the lab people worked on it, and they built this material that can absorb the nasty stuff off of you and hold it until you change out your diapers. And that's how it worked with the Apollo thing. So they brought, when they came back and we did analysis on the materials, I looked at that and I said, we need to call somebody. So we called Johnson. Johnson, you get the disposable diaper. That's where it came from.
Huh. And science at its best.
Transfer. Right. And we do that by thousands of things. I can spend hours in a house just pointing at stuff where you didn't know where it came from. One of the coolest things I ever worked with was in 1981, the space shuttles were just built, and they have five computers on board, and they all vote on problems that the space shuttles have, and it goes through its routine.
Okay.
And they move it four or five... I forgot the extraordinary number, hundreds of millions of decisions per second. And there's five computers, so two vote against two. The fifth computer does the tiebreaker. It's an amazing system. Anyway, you got to talk to this thing. So we built this thing called SPOC, Special Portable Onboard Computer. And the astronauts would carry it on board, and they plug into the shuttle, and they could talk to it and get data. And we told them to take it home and analyze it, bring it back. They did. And then finally we asked them to give Spot back to us. And they said, they really just said no. What do you mean no? It's so handy. I said, what are you doing? The guy said, I'm doing my taxes on it. I went, oh, man. So we finally just took them away from them. But I called Litton, and Litton called IBM, and you got the laptop. That's where it came from.
Whoa.
The first laptop ever built was named Spot. A special portable onboard computer designed to talk to the democratic computer system of the space shuttle.
Did you make a zillion dollars on that one, David?
I got a cut. And so I said, I retired when I was 50. So
you did okay.
I did okay. That's a good word for it.
Wilfred in Winnipeg, Canada is with us now. Hi, Wilfred. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, you're very welcome.
Is there any way to be able to get a hold of you, Mr. Adair?
David, can they get a hold of you through your website?
Absolutely. I've just looked over here at my computer. The website is tied into my computer, although I'm 3,000 miles away from it, the webmasters. But I just got 26 emails talking to you.
I love it. So, yes, he'll take your emails.
That's the answer, yes.
Right, but I mean, what's the email, though?
All right, we've got it linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. But
I wanted
it
to ask
is...
him about, it's regarding a question about an engine that basically, it'll create a black hole ahead of the engine. If you can imagine like a horse with a stick and a carrot, and the horse is the engine, and the carrot is the black hole. And so basically the engine never reaches the black hole. But it's kind of constantly following, sort of like it's a, well, it's a perpetual engine, and it's perpetually, it's like a roulette wheel where you got the ball constantly
spinning. Spinning and falling. Okay, yeah, his email. And this is through the documentary email, David, that people can reach you?
Yes, it is. America'sFallFromSpace.com.
There it is. America'sFallFromSpace.com, Wilfred. And, just email and David will get back to you. Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hello, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah, David, you mentioned flying and, you know, like referencing the movie The Right Stuff. Are people overly trusting, like those pilots and the technology and their skills to do supersonic flying? And say the cell phones went out, you know, like a solar flare hit the satellites, would people flip out without that technology suddenly at their fingertips? And then finally, with your dreams, you mentioned tapping into a dream. Do you write down your dreams? Do you intentionally try and remember them?
Well, one part of the question, just take a cell phone away from a teenager and watch what happens in about a few hours.
Yeah, we've been saying protect the power grid, because when that goes down, we're all up a creek.
Yeah, if, right now, I hadn't had time to tell you this, George. I'm working with the policymakers out of Colorado and Maryland, and Congressman Lambert and Andy Harris. And I asked him a question. Well, not them, but let me back up. There is a place in Boulder, Colorado called Space Weather Center.
Okay.
And so, yeah. Okay. And the guy, a really nice man there named Theo, runs the thing. And they have two satellites setting out 1 million miles away from Earth, and these satellites are designed to find CMEs and then plot their course as they're coming at us. Back on July of 2012, the Mayans were almost right. A perfect storm of three CMEs in a row, one sitting out further and two of them back-to-back. And they passed 110,000 miles by Earth. That's half the distance from here to the moon.
Yeah.
And these CMEs went right by, never said anything on the news about it. If they had hit, they would have put us back into the days.
That's right. We talked about it. We talked about it here, David. But
I know I've heard that you guys have been active and everything. But anyway, that I'm trying to get. I'm working with the senators.
Good for
Senate
you.
Committee.
Don't give up.
H.R. Bill 2147. It's called the Shield Act.
That's right.
And it will basically Faraday your entire grid. And what they're proposing is take $10 billion out of the budget of Department of Energy that has a $30 billion budget a year.
Or take it from the wall and do it. You know?
Well, they said, it's part of the job of the DOE to take care of this. So it makes sense to pull their budget to beef up.
It sure does. The other question from Joe is the astronauts, when they're involved and have to depend on high technology to get them to where they're going, were they a little skittish in those days?
Oh, God, yes. They, so uncertain. There was no library that you could walk over and pull a book out. You know, how do you do this? One thing, they were scared about going through the Van Allen radiation belts. And
They didn't know what would happen.
No, they had not a clue. Another thing, they were scared about eating in space because they didn't know how the bowels are going to react. You know, gravity effects.
Or swallow, right?
They were scared about that.
They choked to death.
A lot of fear. These guys just plowed on through it. It wasn't that they weren't scared. They just were able to overcome it and push. But they were scared about a lot. There was so much that we had no idea what would happen. And they wondered what would happen if you sneeze in a weightless environment. You know, they just all these thoughts. And, I mean, just stuff that you take for every day, they went, wait a minute, that might get me killed up here. And God bless them guys pushed on and just to see what would happen. And quickly we started finding out stuff. They had to be careful when they ate because if food floated around, somebody's, corned beef would be floating by and you inhale it. You're going to choke to death.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Yeah, those are all real possibilities.
Oh, yeah. There's just so much, coming from every different direction. And somebody, you was always hearing somebody go, well, what happens if this happens? There's no place to go for reference. We were writing the library as we were doing it.
Why did we stop going to the moon? What happened?
Okay. I don't have a decent answer for you because none of it's logical, except if you start applying the technologies from your crowd, and they really answer the questions really good. I have a proposal. I checked on something. Do you know how much physical junk we left on the moon? I did an inventory list.
I bet quite a bit.
400,000 pounds. And we've got 96 bags of feces laying up there. Well, like I told you, something's got to give.
Something's got to give.
And we have rockets and probes and half a lunar landers and a top lunar landers. And so I just asked this question to an audience once, said, how would you feel if I came over to your property and dropped 400,000 pounds of junk? What are you going to say to me? Well, you know, I'll shoot you or I'll run you off. Don't ever come back. I think that's what happened, y'all. I think we just trashed the moon so bad, by the time they got to Apollo 17, they just told us, don't ever come back
here. Don't come back, yeah. Let's go to Richard in North Carolina. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hi, George. Always a pleasure. And David, I'd like to say it's an honor to even speak with you. I had a little sighting that I saw. Your knowledge of rockets and possibly ships and motors might, you might be able to shine a little better light on what I saw, but football being passed to you was the best description. It was a football-shaped ship, and as it come in, it was red, glowing, smoking ferociously out the back end. I thought, well, it's real close, but no, it was very large because it had just come in. And then it leveled off where I could see the side, and still glowing red. It had a greenish, yellowish blue stream of light that come out the back of it. And this light started widening into a fan off of the tail end. And then it engulfed the ship from one end to the other. And as it did so, one of the most beautiful light shows I've ever seen, as a matter of fact. But as it did so, it cooled the ship to a light gray.
My goodness. Man, I'd like to have seen something like that. Obviously, by the lights and the colors, it's giving you an indication on possible temperatures of the structure itself, which that would indicate that they're using some kind of magnetic fields or magnetic drives that would do that. Man, I'd like to see something. I've never seen a UFO other than a little dot out in the distance. But some of the stuff people describe, such as yourself, it's just amazing. I wish I could get a close-up look at some of that stuff.
Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington now. Wayne, you're on with Mr. Adair. Go ahead.
Good evening, Sir George and Sir David. Wanting to find out about your containment engine, and if you were able to patent it in any way, or if the government patented it and ever used it in any way, and then about the lighting in Area 51, you said there was no shadows down below. Could that have been electroluminescent lighting? And then a little bit about the symbiotic engine and how far away you think we are from that.
Well, let's back up and answer the first question. I didn't patent anything because I had, this is all part of the story, it's not details involved, but I had told my dad to light his pipe and then take it easy. When I was at White Sands, I'm being Shanghai to Area 51, which I never knew it by the name Groom Lake. I just told him I'm going to a place called Groom Lake.
I understand that part of the story, right?
So Dad lit his pipe with what it is. He went to the garage and burnt everything in our lab, everything, the models, the projections, the tables of equations, everything you ever need to build that thing, he burned that all. So after I took out Pislam at Area 51, there was really nothing left other than what was in my head, and I did not patent anything because they're already onto it, and if I put any patents in, they're going to pick it right back up again. So I burnt everything behind me. And the only thing they had left at the end was just me. So I wasn't going to tell them anything because they were just bent.
You still there, David?
David Adair.
Oh, we lost him again,
folks. Can't take your call now.
Look at that. Isn't that strange? He's gone. Well, we're almost done with the hour. But let me go to Joe in the Bronx. Joe, I can't answer his question, but you're on with me.
Hey, George, how are you? I was going to ask David what kind of rocket engine would be used on the Mars mission, and what fuel would it be using? And
that would have been a great question. There's different kinds of propulsion I'm sure they're going to use. It's got to be. They can't use the same kind of propulsion systems we're using now, to be sure.
No, because of the distance.
Oh, my God. It would take years to get there. We've got to come up with something much faster than that. Anyways, we're going to come back in a moment. We've got an hour to go of open lines for you, so just about anything goes. Plus, I want you to share with me a story that was probably one of the scariest moments in your life, if you would do that for us. Right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch your dial. Open lines next on Coast to Coast AM.